Episode 172 of Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group, the world's leading and most diverse futures and options exchange. CME Group's markets help individuals and businesses around the world manage risk and seize opportunities. Learn more at futuresfundamentals.com.
Every day, traders and investors dive in to tackle the ever-changing markets to find opportunity. Futures Radio Show is your number one source for answers to the questions that all market participants want to ask. Veteran futures trader Anthony Crudele sits down with the most influential leaders and top traders in the industry. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudele.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the newest episode of Futures Radio Show, where we will highlight our favorite moments of the show over the past month. But before we get started, I want to thank all of our sponsors, CME Group, Trading Technologies, and Top Step Trader. So without further ado, let's dial into those top moments of the show this month. I want to go back to you using both fundamental and technical analysis. And with the new year coming up, what are some things that you'll be looking for a possible catalyst for a trade?
Well, I'm big on trying to find a regime change or what we call a phase transition, particularly in trends. So trends 3 months or more, that's what I really care about, but whether it be data or signal driven. So data, fundamental research data. I think the most likely one to change direction, like I said, is reflation rolling over, or inflation rolling over, reflation rolling over. We call it reflation's rollover, and you got to have some alliteration for people to pay attention on Twitter. But the reality is that that one looks more likely than anything to me. And the other big one is the trend is no longer your friend in either Chinese growth or European growth, particularly Southern European growth. So again, these are macro research trends that have already turned. So what we call old China, and it's kind of interesting. The Shanghai Composite Index has not had a lot of people talking about it. I guess it's the holiday week, but you know, it's down about 3% in the last month. That looks nothing like the NASDAQ, and we do see that that runs in conjunction with the Chinese data slowing. So that's really back to, you know, my approach. I mean, I'm looking at the data at the same time as I'm looking at the signal, and while the signal in Chinese equities or any equity market, by the way, isn't always reflecting the economy, it is interesting to see that developing, because that's one of the calls that we have for the first part of 2018 is China slowing, and like I said, the south of Europe, in particular Italy, Spain, Portugal slowing.
What types of technical analysis are you using to trade options?
Yeah, okay, so couple of things. I wouldn't say technical analysis is like the be all and end all for me. I do use it and I do like it, but probably there's a little bit of a difference with options traders to futures traders, where you guys are more relying on the technicals. I use them, but it's not sort of my number one factor. You know, option Greeks and probability are probably the number one thing that we look at. But in terms of technical analysis, I do definitely look at it. You know, a couple of my favorite things are Bollinger Bands. So typically, after you see a period of range expansion, those Bollinger Bands start to really widen out. You know, after a period of expansion comes a period of contraction, and vice versa. After a long period of contraction, you know that at some point in the near future, the range is going to expand again. So we can really take advantage of that as option traders. One of my primary strategies is called an iron condor, which is basically a neutral trade. You want the stock or the index to stay within a specific range over a course of a period of time. So, you know, if you get that period of really big expansion, you know that over the next couple of months, the stock is probably going to consolidate those gains. You know, maybe the range is going to settle down a bit and it's going to trade in a tighter range, which is perfect for an iron condor. So I use Bollinger Bands a bit. And then, you know, I don't trade directionally a lot, but I do look at that sort of thing. And one thing that I put a lot of reliance on in terms of that is divergence. So, for example, if a stock is making a series of lower lows, trending downwards, but then the RSI indicator starts to make higher lows, so it's kind of the indicator is diverging from the price, that's what I've found to be a pretty reliable indicator in terms of a trend change. So that's probably the two biggest things that I use in terms of technical analysis.
Morgan, someone who's always ahead of the curve when it comes to technology and trading, what are your thoughts on Bitcoin, Bitcoin futures, and other cryptocurrencies?
Well, I think blockchain technology and cryptocurrencies is a distributed, decentralized messaging layer. It's a way of sending messages back and forth. It's a way of transmitting data back and forth, and it's basically a distributed software platform. And you know, there's lots of concerns about nefarious things it can be used for, but the reality is, it's just new technology, and a lot of the things that people say are bad about it, they're being done, you know, with U.S. dollars today. So, you know, if you don't think the U.S. dollar is bad, then you really shouldn't think that the blockchain is bad, because you know, the same types of things are being done. It's just, and it's a minority of people that are doing it. So I think at the end of the day, this is really a very interesting set of technology tools that have never existed before. And I think it's, you know, one application is, you know, the replacement of fiat currencies issued by governments or the Federal Reserve. I think that there's definitely an argument and obviously demand for that. And I don't think that, you know, that's going to change anytime soon. So as long as we have deficits, as long as we have politicians, and as long as we, you know, we don't have term limits for our elected officials, I think people will be asking for alternative currencies to store value. And so I view this from a very fundamental standpoint. If you look at all the trillions of assets, actually hundreds of trillions of assets in the world, cryptocurrencies are a very small fraction of it today. Call it, you know, 20, 30 basis points. And it's probably, you know, it's pretty likely that it's going to be 5 to 10% within the next 5 to 10 years. So you could do the math on that. Money's going to be pouring into, you know, alternative currencies, and you know, cryptocurrencies are part of the blockchain, but there's also going to be a lot of new applications that come out of the blockchain, which is just a, you know, in most cases, a public way of keeping track of things, of accounting for things, whether it be who owns a house or you know, who traded with whom. It's a very public way of doing that that's secure, and makes it so that we can accomplish things that that we haven't accomplished before. So I'm very bullish. I think I actually made the prediction last week at the Newsweek conference that we'd see Bitcoin in the $20,000 to $30,000 range very soon, and I think that, you know, we'll see lots of other alternate coins like Ethereum and NEO and Litecoin and things like that also start to benefit from that new liquidity from the CME futures contract.
Do you own any cryptocurrencies?
I do.
You want to tell us which ones?
I own Bitcoin, and really most of this is just, you know, setting up a college fund for my kids. So on their behalf, I kind of got them long Bitcoin, Ethereum, NEO, Ripple, Dash, and Litecoin are the main ones that we're net long, and you know, it's working out pretty well. I tend to look at it as a kind of long only basket. I do trade the cross rates between the various cryptocurrencies for them when we see kind of relative value disparities. But you know, if you don't want to get that involved in the currency trading aspect of it, because that's something I did for many years. You can just, you know, buy a basket based on market cap and probably benefit from this this new trend into, you know, decentralized currencies.
Hey, everyone. I hope you're enjoying the show so far, but I want to pause and thank one of our sponsors, Trading Technologies. I started using TT in the year 2000, and I love it. It is by far the best trading platform I have ever used, and I've tried a lot of them. With TT, you can trade the global markets from virtually anywhere in the world. They are the world's fastest commercially available futures trading platform. I highly suggest you go try out TT, especially because you can try it for free. Just go to tryttnow.com and set up your account. We also talked about how disruption is a really slow process, and there are a lot of things that used to work that do not work now. I mean, I've had many conversations with you, not just when we were playing golf, but on Twitter, in chat, and we have seen so many people, Jeff, talk about things that used to happen in the past that they're seeing happening now that were very similar, and they're expecting that same type of response. And I constantly tell people it's just not that easy. You can't hang your hat on something that used to work now. I'd sleep a lot better if that was the case, because believe me, I've been through a lot of changes over the 18 years I've been trading the E-mini S&P. And you and I, we try to tell all these other traders that, look it, you have to have your strategy. Just because something worked before, or you see something that's happened in the past is similar to what's happening now, does not mean it's going to continue to work. And a lot of traders are struggling, Jeff, because they are seeing things that used to work that can't. Talk to us about that and how you are constantly adapting to the changing markets.
Well, this is one of the reasons I went more systematic and track everything, because then I have a chance of knowing if the market is changing some rather than being discretionary. When I was totally discretionary, anytime I got in a little funk or a little drawdown period, the first thing I was looking at was me in the mirror. Is it me? Is there something going on in my life? You know, is there some problem from, you know, just nagging at me? Is there something with me? I would never think it's just the market right away, right? Because everything depends on you as a discretionary trader. As a systematic trader, boy, I'm tracking everything in the stats I use. I can know if stuff is starting to erode. And that can allow me to make some changes then. And I agree with you. Disruption is happening. It's happening all over because markets are just built not to pay the masses, to pay the few. If everybody was allowed to say, oh, this is what's been working for the last year, and I'm just going to do that, and each other person comes along and stumbles on that and keeps doing it, the market has to change from that because it's not going to allow that mass of money to continually profit. It's going to have to shake them off. And that's it. So what was normal has to become abnormal in the markets at some point. Keep an open mind. You can't get fixed and think I discovered the Holy Grail. This is going to work forever exactly the same way. It's always markets change and everything's going to change. It's not always fast. Sometimes it's a slow process. And how am I going to understand if my stuff is starting to erode some? And that's where, you know, that takes a little work and a little thought process.
For all the traders out there listening that are looking to trade the news, look at what your competition is. I mean, this is what's so interesting to me about this. When I had looked over your company at FIA Chicago, and one of the things I learned about your company is that you guys use text analysis to quantify the tone of the central bank and also corporate communications. But when I knew that you guys were quantifying the tone of the central bank, that's really what triggered my interest in Prattle, because as a trader who's been watching this stuff for, I've been watching Fed meetings for 18 years and how they're moving on these words and sentences. I have to say for myself, it's been like, I'm always scratching my head going, man, they're moving immediately off of it, wondering how they were digesting that data to know really what it meant. How do you guys do that?
This is a great question. There's a lot of moving parts on this. So I'll start with the central bank data, and I'll talk about the equities data separately. But the fundamental premise of what we're doing is we're taking what Janet Yellen said and seeing how the market responded to it. And then we're looking at, okay, if she gave a speech that was particularly hawkish, or the market responded to it as though it's particularly hawkish, future speeches that look like that one in a variety of weighted and stratified ways are also likely to elicit a similarly hawkish market response. So we can say that one's hawkish as well. The beauty of this is we're quantifying all of it. So it's not, oh, that seems like it's hawkish or it feels like it is. That's a half a standard deviation more hawkish than the last time she spoke. We can be very precise. And the way it works is it's fairly straightforward computationally and fairly complex mathematically. So the first moving part is that we are looking at for patterns in the language itself. So if you think about a 500-word communication, if you were to map out the relationship between every single word in that communication with every single other word, as well as every phrase, every sentence, and each paragraph, that actually goes from being a 500-word communication to being about 80 billion nodes. So that's a lot of data. You take that short communication and all of a sudden there's a whole bunch of data in the patterns in all of those nodes. And so what we're looking for is, how do the patterns there match up to market response? So for central banks, market response is very complex because, of course, there's systemic market response, short, medium, and long term across asset classes. In the case of central banks, we look at a short-dated bond, a long-dated bond, the trade-weighted currency, and the domestic equity index. So that's in the U.S., that's the 2-year, the 10-year, the trade-weighted dollar, and the S&P 500. So the idea for us is to really be able to identify trends in market response based on those historical communications, and then translate that to when a new communication comes out, we identify all the ways it looks like prior communications where we knew what the market response was, and we can score that communication based on how hawkish or dovish it looks in comparison to prior language. The beauty of this is that we can also natively build in a machine learning component to identify how new language, previously unseen language, things like large-scale asset purchases or quantitative easing, terms that just didn't exist before. We can actually identify how that language relates to other known entities, and in real time, we're able to map the relationship between that new language and known entities in order to identify what that really means. And with each subsequent usage, we actually get more and more accurate. On the equity side, it's the exact same model to map out the language itself, but because equities have an individual price, discrete price action, in some sense, it's mathematically easier. We control for all of the known quantitative factors that affect price movement. Things like, did they beat or miss earnings? What's guidance? What's the industrial sector doing? What's ROI, ROA, ROIC? Control for all those known factors and essentially isolate in on the residual price movement that's left over. We then actually, instead of just looking at price, we look for abnormal returns, so alpha, right? So we focus in on cumulative abnormal returns over a set time interval. And using the patterns we've identified in the language, we can see how those patterns in language correlate with positive or negative abnormal returns, and then use that to develop a baseline for the language of that individual company. The beauty of this is we can also tag on individual speakers. We can identify what percentage of time they're speaking, but also the sentiment of each corporate officer, as well as the sentiment of even the individual analysts asking a question on that earnings call. And so really, you can think of this as a giant pattern recognition system. The beauty of it being that the whole system is continuously learning and it's completely unbiased. So we're looking at absolutely everything that comes out. We're doing it in a totally unbiased way, and we're yielding back testable quantitative data that really works, that is only focused on communications we already know moves markets.
Thank you for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you have any questions or comments for myself or my guests, please visit futuresradioshow.com and sign up to be a premium member for free. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.